Hello and welcome to another episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. Today we'll be covering everything from the new net rankings to the newest enemy of the conference, some coach hot seats, and as always, we will cover your listener questions along with our weekly awards. So to start things off, we want to talk about the new net rating that the NCAA has introduced this year, which came out with some heavy criticism across the college basketball world.
Yeah, so the new net rankings were really contentious when they first came out at the beginning of the week. A lot of people were mad that Ohio State was number one. And the initial net rankings were pretty interesting for the A-10. Duquesne actually started out in the lead for the conference, but only a couple days have passed since then, and there haven't been a ton of games, but now Dayton's actually taken the lead. They come in at 47th in the A-10.
The movement of the net rating within its first few days has been something just absolutely insane. Dayton moved up 22 spots, Fordham dropped 32 spots, and neither of them played a game in that time. Now, granted, it's early in the season, but I'm not sure I trust a ranking system that fluctuates this hard when you don't even take the court.
Yeah, so obviously a lot of people weren't really fans of the RPI system. It kind of tended to overrate teams that would game the system and play top teams from bad conferences. And so far, I don't know, I feel like a lot of the criticism has come because it's just been so early in the year. There's some really interesting teams. Like, I'll just go outside the A-10 a little bit. Belmont's in 10th right now. San Francisco out of the WCC's in 12th. And then Radford, who was defeated by the Duquesne Dukes, they are 26th. And Virginia's currently in first place. Also, Michigan, Gonzaga, and Duke are in the top five. So those seem pretty normal, but I don't know. I feel like if they were going to release this, they should have waited a little while, because right now it's just pretty wacky.
Well, all-time, teams with the number one rating in net are now 0-1 after Ohio State defended their contentious number one rating by getting pounded at home by Syracuse last night.
Yeah, huge win for the Orange, taking down the number one team on the road, or apparently the number one team at the time. But, so anyway, do you have any strong opinions on the A-10, like any of the A-10 teams with kind of weird rankings to you? Anything that catches your eye?
The top three, Dayton, Duquesne, and St. Louis, all feel kind of right in their current spots. Dayton 47, Duquesne 52, St. Louis 70. All three of those teams have chances to improve their record. They got good they got tough games coming up. It feels like VCU's too low at 117. They've impressed me so far this year.
Yeah, I definitely agree with VCU. They should probably be a little bit higher. I also think UMass at 180. I know they had the bad loss a couple weeks ago to Howard, but They played Nevada, I don't want to say close because they still lost by over 20, I think, but they've been playing pretty well. I feel like Fordham at 159, I know they have a good record, they're 5-1, but they might have the softest 5-1 record in the entire country right now, so I expect that to drop. I also feel like GW at 303, that's grossly overrating them. I mean, I know they finally got off the schneid with a win, but They're having a rough season.
I mean, a conference this good should not have teams in the sub-300. And GW's played a really tough schedule so far, as had LaSalle. The other one, St. Bonaventure at 308, that honestly just, like, I don't see them as one of the 50 worst teams in the country. And now, granted, Courtney Stockard's back now, so that partially changes the opinion. But all three of those teams should rise as the season moves on, and as some lower conference teams start to truly show themselves.
See, you would hope so, but that's just what's really been the issue for the A-10 this year. I really think the top of this conference so far, like St. Louis, Davidson, Dayton, maybe VCU, they've all been playing well, but the bottom of the conference, it's always bad. This year, it's just been even worse than usual, and that's killing it, and that's why a lot of people or thinking that the A-10 might not be a 3-bid league this year, which we'll get into that in a little bit, but the bottom of this conference, it's just like an anchor pulling everybody else down. And that's why I'm worried about when you get into conference play, you just know somebody like St. Joe's or Rhode Island or Davidson, like, not to call them out or anything, because it could happen to anybody, but there are going to be good teams in the A-10 that lose to St. Bonaventure and GW, and that's just going to kill their resumes. And you hate to see it, but That's what happens when you have a bad bottom of the conference.
Honestly, they're so low this year that none of the truly good teams should lose to them. It harkens back to a few years ago when that really bad Duquesne team beat a top 20 St. Louis squad. But even then, St. Louis had already clinched the conference for the regular season, and they got caught looking ahead. That shouldn't happen this year. The difference between the top and the bottom is just too wide.
Yeah, there's just going to be so many opportunities for landmines once we get into conference play. All right, so one thing I did want to talk about, something that's interesting with the net system, is that they're including scoring margin in their calculations, so winning by more points is beneficial compared to just winning by one or two. And it only goes up to 10 points in each direction, so I don't know how big of an impact it will be, but do you have any opinion on that? Like, should scoring margin affect how the selection committee views teams, or should it just be wins and losses? What do you think about that?
I've always been a firm believer that the RPI or whatever ranking system you want to use should simply be a guide, and that's how you formulate your list of who to look at. And from there, you have to go in team by team, look at things like their quality wins and their bad losses. And quite frankly, I'm not really that concerned with scoring margin. It's something that I personally have not really looked at over the past few years when I do my own bracketology predictions.
Yeah, so I think scoring margin, when you look at systems like KenPom's great, and for KenPom, it's actually interesting. They don't even consider wins and losses. It's all about efficiency numbers, which is really cool. And I don't know a lot of the deeper meanings of how they do their math, where they come up with all their numbers. But yeah, KenPom doesn't even consider wins and losses. It's all about efficiency. And I think if you're looking at who the real good teams are, it's great. Because it kind of tells you like which teams have been unlucky, who's overperforming. I just feel like in terms of picking teams for the tournament, I think it needs to be all about wins and losses, which is why I'm not really a big fan. Even though it's unfortunate when teams come really close to knocking off a great opponent, but I just have a hard time having that benefit them when it comes down to selection. I just think it needs to come down to wins and losses, just who you beat, who you lost to, and where those games were played. I think that's the most important.
Yeah, and we'll debate this more as we get closer to the tournament. It's probably sometime in February. But I just want to end this topic with this. For those of you who aren't familiar with the net system, which I assume is probably most people, this is a new system. We knew it was coming in, but didn't really understand how it works until earlier this week. It's really just shot off of the old RPI formula, but they've added some different things like putting on extra weight for quality wins and road wins, while also putting in the scoring margin and some of their own efficiency stats.
You know, one more note, actually, before we move on from net. I know I just ranted about how I don't like scoring margin being a factor, but last week in the battle for Atlantis, Dayton lost to the number one net team, Virginia, by only 7 points, so I guess if that helps us out, I'll take it, but yeah, I still don't like it very much, but we'll see. We can't judge this until we see how the selection committee uses it to pick teams at the end, because the RPI was never that great early in the season, or BPI, or any of these ranking systems, so we have to wait and see. My prediction is that they're going to do everything they can to keep good mid-majors out, because it's been trending in that direction, and I know I'm biased in saying that as a fan of the A-10, but we'll see what happens. Hopefully it keeps things pretty normal, and I just hope they don't mess up mid-majors too much, but we'll see.
So that brings us to our next topic. The first true enemy of the conference. Enemy number one of the 3-Bid League podcast. Stadium reporter Jeff Goodman.
Ooh!
For those of you unfamiliar with Jeff Goodman's work, he's a former ESPN reporter. Somebody who I thought actually used to do some good work. He did a fair amount of college basketball writing for them. And then his whole career took a nosedive when he volunteered last year to follow LeVar Ball and his family over to Lithuania to take part in their Facebook reality show.
Yeah, that was a bold move.
The Ball family has destroyed the credibility of plenty of people over the last few years, and Jeff Goodman is pretty much at the top of that list. He actually had a falling out with LeVar and with his family, and afterwards ended up leaving ESPN. It's unclear if he left on his own accord or was fired. But now he is at Stadium. And last week, after Pitt beat St. Louis, a quality Pitt team, by the way, in a neutral site game at the Barclays Center, he sent out, the A-10 will almost certainly be a one-bid league. He could have stopped right there. And while people would have argued with him, there are facts to potentially back that up. But he continued on. In fact, the committee should take away the league's auto bid this year. League is not good. Well, the committee keeps giving the SWAC their auto bid every year, so I think we probably deserve ours.
Yeah, the A-10, all right, we all know it's not good, but I was actually looking this up the other day, and I thought it was hilarious. So, around, like, 2012, 2013, back when the Great West was a thing, the conference champion of that got an auto bid to the CIT, which most people probably don't know what that is. I don't know what channel. It's probably on ESPN Plus with the rest of the A-10, but see, the Great West, with, like, five teams at the time, that's an example of a conference that should lose its auto bid. The A-10, I mean, come on, Jeff, that was a low blow. That's a little bit unnecessary.
The best part is that Dayton came out later that night and beat a really good Butler team to really just shove it in Jeff Goodman's face for all of us. We saw you guys in the comments, including some of you who listened to this show. We appreciate everyone defending the conference. And just remember, every big win this year, be sure to tag Jeff Goodman at some point.
Oh, it was hilarious to see the replies. People were getting mad at Goodman. A lot of funny tweets at him. And then I also thought it was really funny, the couple days after the original tweet, I saw a few times where he would sort of backtrack. Like, he would still say, oh, the A-10's not good, but the rest of his tweets would say, like, oh, I said the A-10 had a chance to be a one-bid league, not the A-10 should have zero teams in the tournament. So we'll see. Maybe if he's right, I hate to say it, maybe we have to rebrand this podcast a couple weeks in. Or I hope we don't have to be the zero-bid league next year, but I don't think he's going to be right. We'll get somebody there. The NCAA has got to let that happen.
All I got to say is that in the battle of the A-10 fans on Twitter versus Jeff Goodman, in the words of his great friend LeVar Ball, the A-10 fans in this war never lost.
Never lost! All right, so while we're on the topic, or do you have anything else to say on Goodman?
No, we can move on.
All right, can I... So this guy, he is not an enemy of the podcast by any means. He's a former A-10 legend. He's a great player, but we got to talk about the other person that called us out on Twitter a couple weeks ago. So, do you want to talk about the tweet that you sent, Tyler? And
so,
also, make sure to let people know that this was your tweet, not mine, because I don't want to take credit.
So, a few weeks ago, after watching a Davidson game and really finding an appreciation for the game of freshman big man Luka Brajkovic, I tweeted that he was the best low-post threat that Davidson has had in years. Now, in saying that, I had Peyton Aldridge on my mind. The A-10, I certainly do not think that the A-10 co-player of the year from last year stunk by any means. But to me, Peyton Aldridge was always a shooter first and a playmaker second. Whereas Brajkovic is really your kind of traditional, true low-post five. Now, some Davidson fans took that the wrong way, including the great Jack Gibbs, a man who I have seen mercilessly destroy multiple A-10 teams in the past few years, including some of my own.
Yep.
And tagged Aldridge in it, making sure that he saw what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, I understand both sides of that tweet. Brajkovic is having a really good season, and he's 6'10". He doesn't really play on the perimeter, so he's what you would think of as a traditional big man, where Aldridge, he was a good low post scorer, but he also shot the three really well, so he was a lot more versatile, I'd say. So I understand why people got mad, but just to see Jack Gibbs come on and call us out, that was interesting. I guess all press is good press, so I'm glad that it got his attention. I can say that.
This is really all to say that Jack Gibbs, Peyton Aldridge, if either of you are listening to this podcast, which I'm sure you're not, but if anyone is a friend of either of those two and is listening to the podcast, we would love to have either or both of you guys on. We can argue about the conference. We can talk about the conference. We can talk about something that's not even related to basketball. We don't care. If you guys want on the podcast, we would love to have you.
All right, yeah, just to be clear, Jack Gibbs, you're not an enemy of the podcast. We just had to We just had to mention that, but hope all is well wherever you guys are out there playing. Not in the A-10 anymore, but a couple of A-10 greats. That's good to hear from him, I guess.
And so that is a great lead-in for our next new segment called Where He At? Each week, we will each come up with a former A-10 player while asking the other one the question, where he at? We will have three guesses to try to guess what country this former A-10 alum currently plays in. And so we'll start off. For today, I have a former St. Louis big man who played for the team from 2010 to 2014. And so not to be confused with the actor, Rob Lowe, where he at?
Rob Lowe, wow. He was a good player for SLU. He gave UD a lot of trouble, I remember. Was he from Australia? I'm going to go with Australia for my first guess.
He was not from Australia. You were very close, but he doesn't play there either.
All right. Give me... I don't know. Is he in the Chinese league?
Nope.
All right. Oh, gosh. You know what? Since we brought it up with Goodman, I'm just going to take a wild guess. Is he in Lithuania?
He's not. He plays for the Cairns Taipans in his home nation of New Zealand.
I wasn't sure where he is from. Rob Lowe, though. Good player. Alright, mine... actually, I think he was around the same era, but this guy was a big man for St. Joe's, Halil Kanasevic.
Serbia.
No, not Serbia.
Latvia.
Nope, 0 for 2.
I'm going to stick in Eastern Europe and go with the Ukraine.
No, all good guesses. He's actually playing in the homeland of one of the best players in the NBA right now. He is playing for Trikala BC in Greece. So, Halil Kanasevic, he was always one of my favorite players in the A-10. Really good player on those St. Joe's teams that they went to the tournament with him. I think that was the year they lost to UConn in the first round. But, yeah, anyway, we just thought this would be a good idea as a segment because there's not a whole lot of A-10 players in the NBA. So, for most of these guys, we don't really know where he at.
Yeah, we will continue to do this every week. We're going to try to come up with some good ones. As always, send us some suggestions if you come up with them. But that'll take us back into our normal discussion. There's a seat getting warm in the A-10.
Whose seat would that be?
I heard somebody say that Jeff Neubauer could be in trouble this year, but it's not him. Fordham's playing too well. It's Chris Mooney.
So, we've noticed... And this has been going on a couple years, but especially the last 2 years, we've noticed a lot of Richmond fans on Twitter. They're not too happy after most of these games. Spires have already been brutalitied twice this year, I think. They lost to Longwood on opening night, and then they dropped a game to Hampton. And so, it's fair to say most Spires fans aren't too happy with Chris Mooney. And... You know, Mooney, he took them to the Sweet 16 back in 2011, but it's been a while since then, and I think it's fair to say they're running out of patience.
Yeah, so since then, they've only made the postseason 3 times. They won 1 CBI game and actually won a pair of NIT games in 2 different seasons. One of them was that great TJ Klein senior year where he pretty much carried them. And then last year, a big drop-off going 12-20. It was their first year under 500 since 2007, which was Mooney's second year at the helm.
All right, so that was their first year under 500 in a while for the whole season, but it's been 7 years since the Sweet 16. Out of those 7 years, I want you to guess how many times has Richmond had a winning record over 500 in the A-10, just in conference games?
It's hard for me to guess because I have this up on my computer, too.
Well, that's a shame, but either way, it's twice. He's had a 500 record a couple times in there, but when I saw that 2 out of 7 years with a winning record, the first thought that popped into my mind as a Dayton fan was Brian Gregory, who I think went 3 for 8 in his career. And, you know, a lot of Dayton fans were impatient with him by the end, too. I don't know. Mooney, it's just, I know he had the success. He went to the tournament the year before the Sweet 16 also, but it's, I feel like time's running out. And especially this year, it could be really tough. Big injury to Nick Sherrod. He tore his ACL, and you hate to see that so early in the year. But Jacob Gilliard's also out right now. And so, I don't know how long he's going to miss, but without those guys, they just, we've talked about it a lot on this podcast, but they don't have any depth at all.
Yeah, their bench got shut out for the second time in the year last night against Georgetown in a game that they lost by single digits, and literally any contribution they could have possibly gotten from their bench would have been big. They're putting up slightly more than 6 points a game from their bench unit. Like, it's unthinkably bad, and this is now the third year in a row that they've had this issue. Mooney keeps recruiting some great players, like Grant Golden, but their recruiting depth has been really, really bad.
So, a couple guys to look out for with their injuries now. Nathan Kao, 6'7 forward for Richmond. He's had 41 points in their last two games, so they'll definitely need to lean on him. They also had freshman Jake Wojcik go for 20 points in a pretty close loss against Georgetown. Richmond actually hung with them most of that game. And Wojcik's also, he's 16 for 42 on threes already this year, so he looks like he could be a volume scorer. But, I don't know, without Sherrod obviously done for the year, Gilliard, he hurt his groin. I think he actually re-entered the game after he got hurt, so hopefully that's nothing serious, but they had Julius Johnson and Andre Gustafsson enter the starting lineup for them last night. And, you know, hopefully those guys can pick it up, maybe save their coach. I don't see things getting better for Richmond without Sherrod, though. It's going to be a tough uphill battle for them.
Yeah, and Mooney's been a great coach there. He actually only needs just one more win to become their all-time winningest coach. But it seems like the clock may be ticking, and lucky for Richmond fans, I heard one of their former coaches from this century could very well be available at the end of the year. And no, I'm sadly not talking about John Beilein, but as far as I know, Jerry Wainwright's still looking for a job.
He's out there somewhere, so maybe they'll give their old coach a call. I don't know. We'll see what happens, but yeah, we also brought up Neubauer. I guess we can talk about him for a minute. Fordham, obviously, we all know about them. They're the basement dwellers, and the Rams are actually 5-1 this year, which I think is tied for the second best record in the conference with SLU. So maybe he intentionally scheduled all these easy games to make his record look a little bit better. I don't know. I honestly couldn't tell you if Fordham fans are mad at him or not, because pretty much anything they get out of him is an improvement over their last couple coaches. But we'll see. Those are probably the warmest seats in the A-10. I don't really think anybody else's job is in danger. Do you have any opinion on that? Does anyone else need to pick it up, or is everyone safe?
I'm not going to pretend that Neubauer's at risk right now, not while they have a 5-1 record, but every year there's typically at least one coach fired, and the one thing I want to say is if Rick Pitino is looking for a job, I think the A-10 conference would have him. And no matter what you think of that guy morally, let's be honest, we would all love to be able to hate root against him for a whole year.
That would be entertaining. It would definitely, like I said earlier with Jack Gibbs, how all press is good press, Rick Pitino would bring a lot of press to whatever A-10 team brought him in. And would that be a good idea? Let's just say they could probably win a lot of games for a couple years, but they're not going to be in the record books in the long run. That's all I need to say about that.
Hey, Pitino's proven that his recruiting tactics can work at plenty of different colleges.
Well, if Pitino did ever make a comeback, that would be overcoming a lot of adversity, which means I think it is time for our Four Pickle Award. So if you don't remember, first game of the season, Obi Toppin for Dayton, cramped up real bad, ate some pickles, and got himself back in the lineup. So our pickle award goes to whoever overcame adversity. Tyler, you want to start us off?
Yeah, my Four Pickle Award this week, I'm going to give it to a full team. I'm going to hand it out to the George Mason Patriots, who we semi-mercilessly trashed in our last podcast. after their horrendous start to the season. Since then, they've recovered. They've gone 3-2. Both of the teams that they lost to, Cincinnati and Baylor, both good teams in a neutral site. They're finally doing what some of the other teams in this conference have been doing, which is just beating teams that they're supposed to beat. Wins over Southern, NC Central, and Morgan State. And the rest of the non-conference schedule really is not overly daunting until they go at Kansas State at the end of December. Really no excuses for them not winning their next four, but as for now, they get my four-pickle award for the week for recovering and righting the ship.
All right, so my four-pickle award goes to the best returning player for the St. Bonaventure Bonnies, who finally made his return to action. Courtney Sockard went for 19-7 in just 20 minutes off the bench. The Bonnies took down in-state rival Canisius 70-55 to get to 2-5 on the season. It's been a really rough season for the Bonnies. They got dead last place in a tournament. They didn't really play very good teams. It was all mid-majors. So I really hope this can maybe turn the page for them. Getting Stockard back could be really big, and it's good to see him already looking like he could be in mid-season form in just one game.
All right, so with that, we're going to move on to our fan questions of the week. We actually got a few submissions, so thank you guys. Please continue to send those in.
All right, so our first Twitter question comes from a recurring listener, so thank you, at T.A. Weigand. And he writes, Duquesne has a fair amount of solid mid-major programs on their schedule, but only have a few games that really stand out, like Notre Dame, Pitt, and Penn State. And so having already dropped one to Notre Dame, do they have enough opportunities to earn a bid, even if they don't have any bad losses and finish decent in the A-10? So what do you think, Tyler?
Well, Trent, thanks again for continuing to be a loyal listener to the pod. But I've watched this team since the Danny Nee era, and I've thought about the words Duquesne and at-large bid in the sentence for about a total of 1 week in 2011, when TJ McConnell was just a mere freshman, and they started out the season 8-0 in the A-10. I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. I'm not going to say that this is completely impossible, but for now, I'd like to see them beat Pitt and Marshall in the next week, and then if they do that, then this might be a discussion worth revisiting. The potential is there, but right now there's just not enough to back it up.
So I would say for Duquesne, they've beaten all the teams they should. Nice win over Radford, and they took Notre Dame. They played them pretty close in South Bend. So I would say Duquesne, they are not mathematically eliminated from an at-large bid. And usually, by the end of November, they are. And most A-10 teams at this point, they've pretty much already ruined their chances. So Duquesne, actually, if they beat Pitt, that would go a long way. But will they get an at-large bid? I don't see that happening. They do have a couple good chances, though. I mean, you were telling me, Tyler, that this is one of their toughest non-conference schedules in years. So if they could pick up a couple of these wins, that would really help them out. I've said it before, they're a really young team, so I don't see them winning enough games to make an at-large bid, and they could definitely drop some in the A-10 that are questionable. But we'll see what happens. So far, they're off to a really good start, so
yeah, and the one big thing for them is they have to continue to avoid bad losses, and thankfully they don't play Robert Morris this year, because that game always scares me. They don't play St. Francis PA, that has been a tough one in the past, and thankfully they're just completely avoiding the NEC in total. So I feel a lot more optimistic about their December slate than I normally do.
All right, I'm not saying this to be mean or like ironic at all, but Duquesne's actually like, they're building a decent NIT resume. I'm not trying to be mean when I say that. If they could make it to the NIT, that'd definitely be a big improvement over all the Ferry years, probably. So but that's a good question, Trent. And, you know, we'd definitely love to see Duquesne, Pitt and Penn State. Those are in-state rivalry games for them. So if they could win one of those, that would be huge for them. All right, so we have another listener question from Twitter, from at AATJ1722, and he just wanted us to talk about things that you have already changed your mind on since making preseason predictions, and then he also wanted to know how many teams get to 14 wins in the conference.
So I want to loop that into conjunction with a question that we also got on our email. We were asked, what's one team that has surprised you, and what is one team that's disappointed you? So I guess that we'll just answer all of those together in a group. Just when I think about the conference in general, plenty of teams that I feel like have kind of been who I thought they were going to be. Rhode Island, Davidson, St. Louis have kind of done what I've expected so far. GW, same thing. Two teams that I feel like I still haven't fully figured out, Duquesne. I want to see them play their next two games against tougher competition. VCU, a team that I thought was going to be bad this year. Turns out that they aren't, but I just want to see how they continue to hold up. So for me, there's really three teams where my opinion has changed. One, of course, is George Mason, who struggled out of the gate. They're starting to turn it around. I'm still somewhat optimistic. If I redid my rankings right now, I wouldn't have them at four, but I also wouldn't drop them a ton, especially now that Otis Livingston's coming alive. After we talked last pod, he's now finally gotten a scoring average up to 12.3 a game, and they actually have 10 guys putting up double figures. Beyond that, the one team that has really impressed me has been Dayton. We both thought that they were really going to struggle in that Butler game. They looked great against the Bulldogs. They bullied them. They've given Virginia a better fight than any team in the country has this year, and then played tough against a good Oklahoma team. I really wish we were recording this after their Mississippi State game tomorrow, but I think this is a game they have a great chance to win, and they look like one of the four best teams in the conference so far.
Yeah, that's a really good point on Dayton. They've definitely surprised me this year, and I really, it's hard to say if they've changed my mind since my preseason expectations, because I'll be honest, it's impossible for me to give an objective opinion on them. So I really didn't see them doing this well, especially the Butler game. That game was closer than it should have been, because down the stretch they started turning the ball over a little bit against Butler's press. But they took it to him in the first half, especially after, I want to point out, Anthony Grant's technical foul with about 7 minutes to go. I think Butler scored about 2 points the rest of the half after that, so really fired the Flyers up. Good job by the new coach. So a couple other teams that have changed my mind on. George Mason's the obvious one. They're living proof that just because you return your whole team, it doesn't mean you're good automatically. I don't really need to say much more about that. We've already made fun of them a lot. One team in particular, though, VCU, we were both a little bit down on them, I think. And in particular, at the beginning of the year, I thought their defense would be really bad, because it was already rough last year, and then they lose Justin Tillman and Jonathan Williams. They're actually the 30th best team in the country on KenPom, and they're the best in the A-10, so that's been huge for them. If they could just figure out how to stop turning the ball over so much, they could really play with a lot of teams, and I definitely could see them as a top four team now. And then one other team I've changed my opinion on a little bit, and to be fair, this isn't since the start of the season, it's more like since 1 week into the season. I really thought after St. Joe's blew out Wake Forest, I thought they were the team to beat. And man, they have struggled since then. They get blown out by UCF, lose a pretty close game to West Virginia, and then go at William and Mary. That was a bad loss for them. And then last night against the UIC Flames, they were actually down double digits going into the second half. And St. Joe's, their offense, obviously, it could be the best. It's definitely one of the best in the A-10. They have so many options on offense, but defensively, they just give up so many open threes. And I thought it was interesting. They're actually one of the only teams in the country to shoot 40% from three and give up threes by opponents that shoot 40%. So it's just, they're going to put up a lot of points in most of their games, but I don't know. Their defense looked pretty solid the first few games of the year, but ever since the first week of the season, I've shifted my opinion on them a lot. All right, so do you want to get into the second part of this question, which is how many teams get to 14 wins?
Yeah, so I just want to finish up first for me. I didn't get into my disappointments. My big disappointment from a team perspective is LaSalle. I know we didn't have that high of expectations for them, but I thought that Pookie Powell would be enough to carry them throughout parts of the season. And I know they've played a tough schedule so far, but they're 0-7. Quite frankly, they just don't look good. And there's a very real universe that when they play Alabama A&M on December 21st for the Battle of the Boardwalk Tournament in Atlantic City, that those are the last two winless teams in the country. And if this happens, we're going to be disappointed in LaSalle, but you better believe we're going to hype up this game.
That could be a fun one. I just want to point out real quick, there's only six winless teams left because Chicago State did beat an NAIA school tonight. But the six winless teams, LaSalle, Monmouth, Mount St. Mary's, Maine, Coppin State, and then Alabama A&M, like you said, I'm going to take a guess that LaSalle is the only one of those six that has a national championship. Is that fair to say?
I don't even think that's a guess. That's definitely true. And the big problem for them is just their defense. They're giving up 83 points a game. They got to figure out how to fix that as they get into conference play. But the other disappointments for me, the rest of UMass's supporting cast, this was a team we were both kind of bullish on this year. I'm not saying UMass is a disappointment because I do not want to put Luan Pipkins into that category. He's putting up 19.6 a game, 5.6 rebounds, and a little less than 7 assists a game. He's been great. But the rest of this team has really struggled. Rashawn Holloway's been on and off. Carl Pierre hasn't gotten it going yet this year. And they just need other guys to step up if they're going to start winning games again. Pipkins has done his part so far. And then my last disappointment, the St. Joe's paint defense. We talked a lot about their flexibility throughout the early season and throughout our preview pods. Their big men have shown a lot of ability to go out on the perimeter on offense. They've shown just about no ability to guard the hoop on defense. And that's how they ended up losing to William and Mary. They gave up over 60% shooting from two once again. It was the fourth time this season that that's happened. And they're just going to have to fix that if they're going to get better. But I still believe in St. Joe's.
All right, so now let's get to the second part of the question, which is how many teams get to 14 wins? So I saw this a couple days ago. Mark Adams on Twitter, who, if you're an A-10 fan, he's a great follow because he loves the mid-majors, tweets about them all the time. But I forget which game made him say this, but he said something about how the best team in the A-10's going to go 12-6. And I don't see that happening, even though not too many teams have stood out so far. I feel like we'll still get two teams, at least with 14 wins. I could see SLU doing it for sure. I'm actually pretty confident about them doing it. And then between Dayton, VCU, Davidson, maybe even St. Joe's, I see one more of them getting to 14 wins.
So I think that Mark Adams, who is a great writer, he's definitely worth the follow if you're an A-10 fan. I actually go the opposite way from him, partially because I think the bottom of the conference this year is just so bad that the top guys are going to be able to just cruise to wins against teams like LaSalle and GW this season. So that being said, I think there's a very real chance that we can get to three teams again. Davidson felt like a 14-4 team to start the year. Like I said, they're the one team that my opinion has not changed whatsoever. They're exactly who I thought they were going to be. And then beyond that, I could see two of the three between St. Louis, St. Joe's, and Dayton potentially getting there, with Duquesne and VCU being dark horses to do so. One thing with Dayton that I want to point out, obviously they've been a big surprise so far, but some things with them do feel sustainable. Jalen Crutcher, slightly under 6 assists a game for the year, putting up 13.5 points a game. He has taken a great leap this year. They're out-rebounding opponents by 3 a game. That's despite those numbers being a little skewed from Josh Cunningham's early injury. And then one thing that'll turn around for them, the three-point shooting has just been terrible. Jerry Matos is shooting at 12%. Jordan Davis is shooting at 27%. We thought going into the season those were going to be their two best shooters, and neither of those numbers will stay that low into the long term.
Yeah, you would think, even though Dayton, they weren't expected to be a great shooting team, but especially Jordan Davis, he can have some great games now and then. Like, his first two games of the year against North Florida and Coppin State really looked good shooting the ball. And then he kind of disappeared in the battle for Atlantis. So if the Flyers can get him going, that would be big for their offense, which kind of struggled to put up points the last few games. But yeah, definitely agree. Dayton, they could make some noise. And something else that I think needs to be said, this is a great question, asking how many teams get to 14 wins, because since the A-10 shifted to an 18-game schedule in 2015, so we've had 4 years of this now, there's only been one at-large team to win less than 14 games out of the A-10, and that was VCU, who went 13-5. I believe they got a 10 seed in 2015. I know they were in the 7-10 game. For some reason, that's escaping me. But they had a killer non-conference that year. They were actually ranked in February of that year. So, other than that, though, nobody's won less than 14 games again at large bid. And that's the key. It's anything less than that in a weak season like this for the conference, I don't think there's any chance. 13-5 just won't get it done this year.
So, that takes us to our last listener question of the week. We'll cover this quickly since we did touch on a similar topic during our last podcast, but we were asked via our email, just who do we think is the most impressive freshman so far?
All right, so I would say so far, there's been a lot of good ones. I would have to say Obi Toppin, just for what he's brought to the Flyers so far. Given their lack of depth, they really needed some of their new players to step up. And so far, Toppin's just been amazing for them. He's shooting just about 70% from the field. He's a 100% three-point shooter. Don't ask me about the sample size, but he hasn't missed yet. 11.5 points a game. He's blocked some shots, and he just brings so much energy. So I think he'll continue to get a lot of minutes given Dayton's thin rotation, and he could definitely be someone in the Rookie of the Year discussions by the end of the year.
So, I kind of had a co-answer for this. Nick Honor, the point guard from Fordham, he's putting up 18.5 points a game. He's led Fordham in scoring the last four games, all as part of their four-game win streak. He looks like a serious keeper for this Fordham team. The assist numbers aren't really there. He's putting up just slightly over 3 a game. But they haven't had a guy who could score like this and that has actually stuck around for their full career in Fordham in a long time. We talked about this last pod. It's sad to say, but the big key for Fordham is they just got to keep him. But he's doing this already as a freshman. I can't even imagine how good he's going to be by the end of his career. And then going into my other guy, Sincere Carey, I finally got the chance to watch him in person last weekend. And honestly, it was a treat. This guy, now, I don't want to take anything away from a guy like Eric Williams Jr., who was really good last year, but I haven't been this taken aback by a Duquesne freshman since TJ McConnell was there. Carey just has a certain element to his game that's almost tough to describe, where when he has the ball and he's just making his moves, there's just a grace to every little hesitation he has. And that's the ultimate sign of a guy who has a chance to really be special at the point guard position. He had 8 assists in that game against UMass Lowell. It should have been more. People were missing wide open shots where he was putting the ball right in their hands. He really, truly has a chance to be a potential future conference player of the year down the road.
So speaking of a future conference player of the year, I just want to bring up one more guy. I've talked about him a lot, and Cartier Gordon for St. Louis, I don't see him putting up a ton of great stats this year just because SLU is one of the deeper and more experienced teams, so he's not going to be a huge scorer. But moving forward, I feel like he might be the most talented freshman. He was definitely one of the biggest recruits in this class for the Atlantic 10, so his stats won't jump off the page this year, but one thing I did notice, 1.5 blocks a game, he's leading the Billikens in that. And I just feel like he's going to be a huge presence for them in the paint for the next 3 seasons after this.
All right, so that brings us to our final part, our stat of the week. I actually had 2 this week. I couldn't decide between them. 1 good and 1 bad. Rhode Island is shooting 22.3% from 3, which is truly just terrible. The only guy that they have at over 30%, besides one guy who's shooting 1-for-1, Christian Thompson is shooting at 37%, but the rest of this team has been dragged down. Fats Russell's at 16%. That'll go back up. That's not my stat, though. My stat is that they've somehow held opponents to 21.3% across 5 games, which either they are so lucky, or this is the greatest three-point shooting defense in the history of the world.
Well, one thing that comes to mind, that's pretty much the opposite of the Oklahoma game last year where E.C. Matthews and Trae Young were just trading shot after shot. Yeah, it seems like things have been going a little bit different for them, but that's really interesting that they have such a low opponent three-point percentage.
So, for my second stat, this is a stat that I frequently look for and something that I really love in a player. Hassan French on St. Louis is averaging more rebounds per game than points. This is not a small sample size. He is at 7.4 rebounds a game and 6.9 points. And as someone who appreciates a good scrapper on the glass, I love seeing that stat line.
I really like watching Hassan French play. He's a bully in the post. He grabs a ton of rebounds, like you said. I do not love watching him shoot free throws. And when Pitt intentionally fouled him, only up 2 points, with about 5 seconds to go, and he airballed the front end of the 1-1, I was upset for him. Honestly, if he could get his free throw shooting better, though, he could be a really, really solid player for St. Louis. But no, he's a fun player to watch for sure. All right, so my stat of the day, tomorrow night, Dayton takes on Mississippi State, who comes in at 25th in the country, looking like one of the top teams in the SEC this year. And Dayton hasn't won a ranked game at home in a while. It was actually Archie Miller's first season, and it was December of 2011. The Flyers took down number 16, Alabama, 74-62. And that night, the coach on the visitors' bench was none other than Anthony Grant. So I remember that night, I was really happy that Grant lost. But I really hope he wins this one. That's going to be a big one for the Flyers. And hopefully Grant, his experience coaching against the SEC, maybe that will pull the Flyers through to victory. Should be a fun one, though. But I just thought that was really funny that the last time Dayton won a ranked game at home, it was against their current coach.
Yeah, and for those of you who are listening to this on the Friday when we drop it, tonight, two huge games for the conference. Dayton hosting number 25 Mississippi State. Duquesne taking on Pitt, the annual city game at PPG Paints Arena. Neither of these will be bad losses if they fall, but it's a chance for two really good wins for the conference, and it's a big night. And so, before we wrap it up, just some quick notes. If you hadn't figured it out, Obi Toppin is 1-for-1 from three this year. Luan Pipkins for UMass, he's at 6.4 assists per game. I forgot to calculate that before I said it. And then just going into our errors, I apologize once again for the cough. We will hopefully have that cleared up for our next podcast. And then, if you happen to know anyone who works for the Duquesne website or for their stats department, there's an error on there. Three different players have had their stats actually split up into multiple players bearing the same name. And so that would be great if that can get fixed up. Once again, we thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at 3BidLeaguePod. Send us your emails, and let's bring back 24 Hours of Hoops.